Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother f***ing ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 174 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of November 3rd, 2017. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me as always is punchball aficionado Dan Ryan.
If there's one way that I would describe myself, it is certainly punchball aficionado.
There's nothing like Dan and a punchball.
No.
They go hand in hand, or ball, they really ball in hand, or
ball in fist.
Dan and I will be embarking. Dan and I will be aardvarking. On our very own Odyssey, starting this week with our Super Mario retrospective. It's going to be stupid. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line, and you can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. Dan, we got a long night ahead of us. How are you?
I'm good. How about that Sony press conference at Paris Games Week?
We were just talking a minute ago. I didn't see a lot of it, but the stuff I saw was cool. Why don't you give us a breakdown of the highlights?
Shadow of the Colossus looks amazing. Like watching the original trailer and then watching the new footage side by side with it, it's like, oh my god! Like it just.
I didn't realize the PS3 version wasn't. Either I'm remembering the PS2 version even like a little better than it was, because I don't have very fond memories of the way that game ran on PS2. It kind of reminded me of Star Fox on Super Nintendo, of like a
right.
slideshow levels of a
yeah
of frame rate
slow down.
But I've never seen the PS3 version in action. I just assumed it was like the PS2 one, but not chugging. And then I watched a side-by-side video of like this new one, and I'm looking at it like, now wait a second. This is very nice looking, but why isn't this what the PS3 game looked like? Because it's not doing anything that's like, it's not Horizon. No, it's not. And it's still not all that optimized from what I can tell, which is, I love Team Ico games. I think they're fantastic, but they really need to get like an optimization team sent over there.
They like, really do.
I wish like the people who like put together Mario Odyssey on Switch would just go over there and be like, look, guys, we're just going to optimize this for you, okay? We're just going to make this work. It's going to be nice and small. There's not a lot going on here. Let's just make it work. Because I don't know if you know about this, but like Mario Odyssey is like a tiny game. Like memory size is absurd how small it is. And I don't know what kind of voodoo magic the people at Nintendo use for that, but I wish they would share that with Team Ico, because their games, their art direction is stunning. Their games are amazing. They're just technically, something's wrong.
It is, and it always has been. And hopefully, like, because that was the problem with the PS3, the HD remaster, was that they were just remastering a, for all intents and purposes, broken engine. At that point,
it's just like slapping band-aids on it. I just figured,
just
let it run at a solid frame rate. Like, that's all I want out of this game. Like,
and it did run a little bit better, but not nearly enough to warrant like another purchase or anything.
Yeah, I think this new version looks phenomenal. I was just looking at seeing the PS3 version for the first time, nowhere near what my expectations of it were, really kind of a letdown. But this new one looks very, very pretty.
Well, and this new one is completely rebuilt.
Exactly. Like, it's a brand
new game. You know, I mean, they are just making a new version of this from the ground up. And what's even cooler about it is that when it comes out in February. Mm-hmm. It's only going to be $40.
Well, that's nice.
Which is really cool.
I approve.
So that looked really awesome. The new Spider-Man trailer looked really great.
Oh, I know, man, that game's still not doing it for me.
I know.
And I'm watching the new trailer, like, I'm waiting for this thing to grab me, and there's just something rubbing me the wrong way about it. I don't know what it is.
I can't quite figure it out either. I don't really get it. The God of War trailer looked really awesome. The battle system looked really fun.
How do you feel about the kid? Because I feel like this could be kind of like the kid in Iron Man 3, where it could very easily go very poorly, but yeah. If it's done just right, it could be really cool. Like, I loved in that thing where you're fighting and the kid's like on the ceiling, like he's looking out for you, and you're just like, okay, now I know there's something on the ceiling, so you're not getting like sucker punched from behind because this kid is there shooting arrows and telling you when something is attacking your back. And I thought that was really, really cool, and I would love to see how well that plays out when you're actually holding the controller, but boy, it looked cool.
I hope that plays out well, because look, there is nothing worse than escort missions in video games. They're the absolute worst. Like, I don't know that they've ever been done well, maybe outside of Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, because half the time you could just say, wait in this dumpster, and go off and do everything, kill everyone.
Everything in the level, and then I'll come back and get you.
And we'll just walk to the end.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about the only reason that was even tolerable. So I have to believe that if it wasn't playing well, it would have been axed.
It's not necessarily the playing well, because he doesn't look like an escort mission. He looks like he's holding his own. Like, we are talking about the son of Kratos here. Like, I'm not concerned with him being able to hold his own in a battle or really getting in your way. I'm more concerned with him being a little kid, you know, like a little kid sidekick. That's not really what God of War needed, was a little kid sidekick. Like, I hope he doesn't delve too close into short round territory.
Now I kind of hope he delves into short round territory.
You call him Dr. Kratos.
I love it. I love everything about that. Speaking of Sucker Punch, nice little segue there that you set up for me. Ghost of Tsushima.
I didn't see that one.
Oh my God. That game looks out of control. It is an open world samurai game where you are basically just a samurai being as badass as possible. And Sucker Punch doesn't make bad games.
Remind me, what do they do?
Sucker Punch is Sly Cooper and
Infamous. Got it. Okay. Gotcha. Cool.
So, you know, now I think the way you pronounce it is Ghost of Tsushima.
I'm sold on that being the pronunciation. I'm not sold on the game.
Well, I mean, have you played any of the... you've played the Sly Cooper stuff, right?
I've played a little bit of Sly Cooper. I've always liked the presentation, but the game itself never really grabbed me.
I love
Sly Cooper. Same with Infamous. Infamous was one of those things that, like, I understood why it was good. It just wasn't for me. I have the first Infamous. I mean, you know, I bought it. I played a bit of it, and it just didn't really click. So Sucker Punch doesn't... There's a disconnect between me and Sucker Punch games. Like, I know that objectively that they are good, but something about them is just not for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can see that maybe with the first Infamous. The Infamous 2, First Light, Second Son, those were all great. I love the Sly Cooper games, personally. I've always thought they were really, really well done. This Ghost of Tsushima looks just absolutely incredible. But really, I mean, above everything else that came out at Paris Games Week, Guacamelee 2.
Mm-hmm.
That was all I needed. Like, we're good. I don't even give a shit about the rest of this. Like, this Erica, this live-action game, looks really interesting. Did you watch the trailer for that one?
No.
It's like if Night Trap was made today. Not like the cheesiness of it, but like...
I was going to say, well, that sells me.
It's like... It's full live video. Like, it is an actress in the game, but like, as you're like going through the motions, as you're watching this movie, basically choices come up on the screen, kind of like a choose your own adventure film at that point.
Gotcha.
It looks really cool, and it could be done really well. And like, that was really neat. And some of the VR stuff that they announced look really cool. And, you know, like, I'm super fucking excited for the Horizon expansion. But then Guacamelee 2, and nothing else matters.
Last of Us 2 looked...
Oh, that looks so brutal.
Yeah, so I'm looking violent. At it like, okay, where's the game? I love these so cinematic violent. Trailers and all, but
yeah.
That was pretty neat. Oh, Concrete Genie, that one I didn't get.
I mean, it looks arty and kind of cool, and, you know, yeah. I'm sure really... it's for somebody. I don't know if it's for me. I think it's really cool that Aloy is going to be in Monster Hunter World.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty awesome.
That's pretty neat.
I mean, I'm still probably not going to play
Monster Hunter. It is still Monster Hunter, so I'm out. But, hey, good for you.
I mean, like, I feel like that game should be for me, but I've just never been able to get into it.
Me neither. And, like, I've tried on a couple occasions, and they're all like, hey, look, play as Link characters. And they're like, yeah, sorry, it's just still Monster Hunter. It's just not mine. Just not
my thing.
Yeah.
So and I know you're not feeling this Detroit Become Human.
Yeah, no, this didn't really change my opinion on it from E3.
Yeah, I can't imagine it would have. I'm still pretty jazzed for that. That's probably not a game that I would buy like day one. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I would probably wait for that to hit like $20-$30 or be like a PS Plus title. Mm-hmm. But you know, Guacamelee 2. Like, really, what else do you need, man?
that was it for me. Guacamelee 2, more chicken. I'm sold.
100% in. I mean, so it was Paris Games Week has never really been that big of a deal, and for them to announce this much stuff.
Yeah, like this was like a Nintendo Direct for Sony, basically.
It really was, and they still have the PlayStation conference in December.
Is that PlayStation Experience, or is that something else?
Yeah, the Experience, yeah. You know, and they've done that every year the last, like, 2-3 years in a row, and they've announced a ton of new shit there. So, you know, I think what we're seeing right now is the competition being good for the industry of, you know, the Switch is doing very well. The Xbox One is certainly not doing as well as they would hope, but it's not selling.
Yeah, you know, it's not. They still have
30 million units sold. Yeah. You know, like, it's not a failure of a system.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
So having this competition is awesome.
Yeah, and I love that this, particularly when you're looking at the Nintendo versus Sony there, and it not even versus, it's just like two very different and distinct styles of games. Like,
yeah.
I can look at the PlayStation library and be like, there is a crap load of stuff on this and coming out for this, and I get why people like this. And you can look at the Switch and be like, yeah, that's giving these people what they want. It's a very, they're very specific styles of things. And I love that they're coexisting very well in this marketplace. It's quite nice. I do think that the general idea of the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 are very similar, which is, I think, why there's still more of a rivalry there. Like, I see a lot more vitriol between comparing Sony and Xbox products than I do. I mean, obviously, there's tons of vitriol towards Nintendo products from Sony and Xbox people who just think Nintendo should die for no particular reason. Just
no real, you know, good reason, anyway. Just,
this should die forever because it's not a PlayStation. Like, okay, whatever. Like,
yeah,
these
pretty stupid.
These things coexisting, I think, is great, and it's just wonderful to see these two very different directions being so very successful. Because, you know, the PS4 is still doing great, and the Switch is doing great, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, we'll be getting one for Christmas because the girl's grandmother has purchased Splatoon 2.
Nice. So, which is a fun game.
That's a thing that, well, I can't play it anywhere else.
That is true.
So we're gonna have to do that. I did play Cuphead finally this
weekend. Oh, did you?
This past weekend.
What, on Steam?
It's Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
It's really hard. Like, it is insanely difficult.
I really want to play that.
It's really good. It's really, really good. I am really, really sad that it is not going to sell anywhere near what it should, because it should be on Nintendo and Sony.
Yeah, that should be everywhere. That game should be as really multi-platform as, you know, it was like, I wouldn't even be sad if it was like time exclusive, like Guacamelee was, you know.
Right.
But eventually Guacamelee showed up everywhere, as it should mm-hmm. have, you know, and this mm-hmm. is one of those games that just, this should be everywhere, and it's sad that it's not. I don't know if it's the same. I was kind of likening it to Bayonetta 2 in my head, but I don't know if it's the same situation where Nintendo funded Bayonetta 2. I don't know if Microsoft actually paid for this game, like, to be made in the first place.
They published it.
Yeah, I know they published it, but I don't know if they actually funded its development. Yeah, I think that might
be... Maybe what we'll see, hopefully in the future, will be, like, the definitive edition.
Yeah, some sort of fancy edition that comes to other platforms. That would make
me
happy. It's
so good. The art style is incredible. The writing is really, really funny. The music is really good.
No, the music is great.
It plays really well.
Yeah.
It's just really hard. Really hard. The bosses are super cool. Like, it's a really fucking good game.
Well, I tell you what's not really hard is Super Mario Odyssey. And no? I don't mean that in a bad way.
Are you done with it already?
Oh, God, not even close. Not only is there a crap ton of stuff to do in the game, but I haven't had nearly enough time to mess with it. Mm. Like, I'm only like maybe two and a half hours into the game.
I saw today that somebody has set a speedrun record for it already at 60 minutes.
Yeah, the getting to the end of the game apparently is not. It doesn't take too long, but the. Like, you don't, there's two whole worlds that you don't even get to before you're finished with the story. It's one of those.
That's weird.
The post game content is like the real meat of the game.
That's cool.
I think is pretty neat, and I'm excited for it. The difficulty thing, what I have noticed about this game is it seems that in every single aspect of it, the only question that they asked was, is this fun? Because everything I've done has been fun, and the lack of challenge, like if fighting against the bosses, even though they're not hard, they're fun to fight, and that's not really usually a thing with Mario game bosses. They're usually not all that fun to fight. I've died a bunch of times just being stupid, which I love because they do away with lives this time. Because
that's good.
That system is basically antiquated. So when you die, your penalty is losing 10 coins. Oh, no.
Oh,
not
no.
10 coins. And dressing up Mario is fantastic. I didn't realize you could mix and match the outfits. So, like, I can wear a cowboy hat and, like, boxer shorts if I want to. It's ridiculous.
That's how I sleep usually, which is weird. Just
a cowboy hat and boxers.
Yeah, well, I like the way it props my head up so that I don't get, like, acid reflux.
The boxers?
Yeah, yeah.
Where's the hat? Never mind.
You know.
Oh, I know. It's on your feet.
Absolutely. They get cold.
Cowboy hats are good for keeping feet warm.
Everybody knows that. Everybody.
Science for the win. No, I'm absolutely in love with Mario Odyssey. It's as great a game as I could have hoped it would be. It's so far just been obscenely fun and very smile inducing.
It seemed very delightful when I played it in the store.
It's really, really joyous. And that's all I want out of a Mario game. I don't want punishing difficulty. I want fun. And, I love that they focused so much on the fun aspect of it. Like, the only gripe I have is that I can't map the controls because there are moves that you do with Cappy that are relegated to motion controls, like shaking the controller and shit, which you can do most of them with some sort of button inputs. Like, there's a super, super useful move that if you're holding the Joy-Con separately and you shake them, Cappy spins around you and hits everything around you. That's a super useful move. The only way to do that without shaking the controller is to spin Mario around until he starts doing this fast spin move and then press the throw button. I just wish I could map that to a button. I could. And something tells me they might patch that in later, like they did with arms. For the longest time, you couldn't map your own buttons and arms. And now that I can, I actually block more. They originally had block relegated to pressing in one of the analog sticks, and
oh no,
I don't do that. I would never block, and now I mapped it to a button and I will block from time to time. So good for me.
Still not often, but
yeah, still not often. I play very offensively in that game. but that's really my only gripe so far is the stuff that is kind of being forced motion controls. It's not super bad. It's not like Donkey Kong Country Returns where it's this one thing that you need to do all the time that is relegated to shaking the controller and it's not very responsive. It's just it's a thing that would make things a little bit less cumbersome if I didn't have to shake the controller or spin Mario around to do. But other than that, I am pleased as punch. And it's really pretty too. Game
it does
gorgeous.
Look really good.
Really, really nice.
Like the demo level that I played was the Dia de los Muertos.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know how I feel about Sugar Skulls to begin with, you know.
If there was ever a Mario stage that speaks to Dan, it's this one.
That's the one. So like playing that one, I was like, this looks really good. Really a very like this is next gen. Or, well, I mean, current gen. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, this is what this is supposed to look like.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a Wii U game.
It's finally hitting the expectation.
Yeah, I mean, the stage, the world before that, the kingdom before that is the Cascade Kingdom, and it's got all these mountains and waterfalls in the background. It's the stage where you get to be the T-Rex.
I didn't realize that was
in the beginning of the game. Like,
yeah,
I thought I had seen some spoilery stuff, but no, most of what happens is right. The first thing in the game is the fight against Bowser. Like, that's the first thing in the game. And then you're facing off against the Brutal Party, which is the evil bridal planning committee, which is
naturally
so ridiculous. Anyway.
Yeah, I imagine we'll be playing that relatively soon.
Yeah, I hope you find some joy in it. It is a fun game. It's very well done. There were some reviews out there that I think are wearing some way too heavily rose tinted glasses about Mario 64, because a lot of people are saying, "Oh, this is the best he's controlled, except in Mario 64, where it was the best." And I don't know what these guys are talking about because I've played Mario 64 pretty recently and things have gotten a lot better since then. Like, it was revolutionary at the time, but
sure.
I mean, I anyone who thinks that Mario controls better in Mario 64 than Odyssey, I think is crazy.
Well, that's just, I mean, like, look, objectively, having an analog stick to control a camera versus four buttons is better.
Is indeed objectively
it's
better.
Clearly better.
I completely agree.
100%. There's really not an argument to be made against it.
All right, let's get to our show. So, all right, a long time ago, we don't get a ton of fan mail, but every now and then we get some. And so, relevant to today's show, here is something that we got all the way back in May. Jamie Hill writes, "Hey, Chris and Dan. I've written in several times before, but I just wanted to drop a line and let you guys know that you are making a gaming difference, at least for me. My wife and I bought a house this spring, and it's a constant project. I love to listen to things while I work, and I don't subscribe to enough podcasts to fill the countless hours I spend working on my house. So I go back through SAG and Waveback to find some interesting oldies. I listened to the Castlevania Retrospective series again, and it lit a fire under me. I bought Symphony of the Night on my Xbox One for $2.50. Wow.
That's a
hell of a deal. And fell in love. I then listened to the Castlevania Waveback episode and decided to play the original. Fortunately, I have a hacked NES Classic Edition with the entire NES library, and that suspend point saved my butt. I'm on the fifth dungeon, and I'm in love. I plan on playing all three NES games and finishing Symphony of the Night. Thank you for exposing me to this series. Being a Nintendo fan, I'm ashamed I haven't played it sooner. Keep up the good work, and if I may be so bold, I would love to hear a Mario retrospective. It may be a 10-parter, but I think it would be great. P.S. I'm going to purchase Castlevania Judgment just for laughs.
laughs,
tears, laughs, whichever.
Either way.
Yes, thank you for writing in, Jamie, as always. Second of all, please write in and let me know how Castlevania Judgment is treating you.
I'm not crying. You're crying.
Because, ouch. And third of all, ask and you shall receive. Starting today, we are dedicating November to a complete Mario retrospective. much like all our other retrospective series we've done, we are going to talk about every Mario game ever. That includes cameos like Tennis and Punch-Out. We're going to be breaking things down mostly by decades, starting this week with 1981 to 1989.
And thankfully, there's only 728 games in that span to talk about.
It's ridiculous how many games Mario's appeared in. I mean,
it works. It really is. But it works on so many levels because, like, it's No Shave November or Movember, which used to be for mustaches. So, you know, we got that going. And, you know, Super Mario Odyssey has just come out. And we're running out of shit, Chris. So it seemed like time.
It's always nice when we have, like, the subjects for several shows planned out in advance, because that means I don't have to think about them for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's even less I have to read beforehand, because I wasn't going to read it to begin with, but now, like, there's weeks where I don't have to read, and it's awesome.
Exactly. All right, so now this is as comprehensive as I could do with the amount of time that I have. I feel that there may be situations where I might have missed a Mario game or two, somewhere in the, like, LCD.
Not a game, but an appearance, you mean, right?
An appearance or, like, an LCD game or something. I think I got them all, but I could be wrong. So, here we are, starting 1981, going all the way to 1989. Let's start at the start, the very first one. Donkey Kong. I'm sorry, Donkey
Kong. Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong, released in 1981 in arcades by Nintendo. This was the first appearance of Mario, then known as Jumpman, or as some other name some other people say something about. There's some sort of trivia attached to that where it's like, oh, most people think it's Jumpman, but it was actually known as blah, 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 blah. But yeah. Whatever.
You're fucking Jumpman, all right?
Let's call him Jumpman. Yeah. If by some stretch of the imagination you have never played Donkey Kong before,
what the fuck are you doing listening to this show?
Seriously, Donkey Kong, especially the arcade version, is an all-time classic. It was one of the hugest arcade games ever because the game's just fun to play. It's super hard. It's great for trying to catch high scores, and it's a great concept. You play as Mario, little dude. He runs, he can't fall too far or he dies, he can't jump super high, he can wield a hammer and stop barrels. So Donkey Kong, giant monkey, captures Pauline, Mario's girlfriend, brings her to the top of a construction site, and Mario has to climb up there and rescue Pauline from Donkey Kong. It's very simple.
Repeatedly,
until you die.
Over and over and over again, and it's so damn fun.
It really is. I love the arcade version. Like, the NES version's good. The Atari 2600 version is...
not good.
Serviceable. It's not the Intellivision version is not, is I think, the worst of the three. There's a great... obviously, there's a couple of fun things to look at if you really want to get into some Donkey Kong differences. There is Let's Compare series. I forget what channel hosts it on YouTube, but they do a whole series of Let's Compare things, and they just show all the different versions of games.
It's Geekade, right?
Yeah.
Geekade.com?
That's it. Geekade.com. Do that.
That's the thing Dean's working on?
Yep, clearly. And there's also Ferg from the Atari 2600 Game by Game podcast does another show called Intari Visions, where him and a group of other people compare Atari, ColecoVision, and Intellivision versions of games. So
also on Geekade, right?
Also on Geekade.
Okay.
Definitely.
Just making sure. All right.
But yeah, I love this game. I love this game to death. And the home console versions are neat, but nothing touches the arcade version. It's just wonderful.
This is one that I would really love to see, like, just make the game over again with, like, new graphics. Like, give me updated graphics, but the same exact game.
Same character weight, same everything. Yep, everything. That would be pretty neat.
Absolutely everything. I just want to see it look prettier.
And granted, I love the arcade look of this game.
Oh, I love the way
it looks.
I
love that, but yeah.
I just think it would be a cool thing to have and to play through, you know?
More and more so than the Game Boy one, which we'll probably get to in a week or two, because there was a Game Boy Donkey Kong that's incredible, but we'll get to that. All right, so moving on to our next one. We can't spend a ton of time on all these because there's a lot. Next on the list, in 1982, all right, 1981, Donkey Kong was the only one. 1982, we get Donkey Kong for Game & Watch. Now, This I counted as a different thing because there are naturally tons of ports of Donkey Kong for every home console and computer at the time. But the Game & Watch game is actually a little bit different. It's got a different, it's, you know, one stage, obviously, because it's a Game & Watch game. It's a bit more complex of a construction stage. You have to basically move Mario to go pull a lever to operate a crane, which then you jump on, and then you get to the top and save Pauline from Donkey Kong. And you just kind of repeat that screen, try to get a high score. It's pretty neat.
I've never played it. And I feel like that I'm going to say that a lot with these because there's just so goddamn many of them.
It's true, especially these early ones. Like, a lot of these unique titles are Game & Watch games, which, unless you have the Game & Watch Gallery games, it's not the easiest thing to go back and play these days.
Right.
I have played Donkey Kong on Game & Watch, and it is a pretty fun game. The Game & Watch games aren't exactly complex, but they're pretty fun.
Right.
So, next up on the list, continuing in 1982, Donkey Kong Jr.
Yes.
Released in the arcade, on NES, on Atari, on ColecoVision, on everything ever. Donkey Kong Jr. was Mario's first villainous role. Donkey Kong has been captured by Mario, and you play as Donkey Kong Jr. trying to save Donkey Kong from the evil Mario, who has, like,
because Mario's a whip. Dick. Mario's a dick. This clearly established.
In this game, is absolutely. Awesome. Oh yeah, Donkey Kong Jr. is great.
It's so good. The very subtle, like, controllability that they built into it, as opposed to just jumping, but being able to climb from vine to vine.
Yeah, that was really, really cool. And I also love the weight of the character. Like, he doesn't feel like you're controlling Donkey Kong Mario. He feels like you're controlling a giant monkey, and he's really heavy, and he feels heavy. It's a very cool game. Now, this is one that I've very rarely played the arcade version of. I've spent a ton of time with the original Donkey Kong arcade, but Donkey Kong Jr. I haven't spent a lot of time with the arcade version. Mm-hmm. I did spend a lot of time with the NES one, which is, like, conversely, I didn't love Donkey Kong on NES. I liked it, but I loved DK Jr. on NES.
Yeah.
You climb up vines. This was such an unexpected kind of sequel too, because it's kind of similar to Donkey Kong, as in, you know, like, you're a character at the bottom and you're trying to climb your way to the top, but it just the dodging birds and moving keys around and that weird spacey electric level where Mario is holding a vacuum cleaner or something. It's very weird. But it's an awesome game. Gotta love it.
It is a fabulous, fabulous game. So it is probably my favorite in the Donkey Kong series.
Yeah, I still prefer the first one in the arcade, but this one is a close second to me. I mean, nobody loves Donkey Kong 3.
No.
Not even Mario.
No.
This was also the Donkey Kong 3 did not have Mario in it. It featured Stanley the Bugman. So Donkey Kong 3, not a part of this podcast.
That's right.
All right, so
Stanley the Bug.
Exactly, screw that guy. Donkey Kong Jr. was then a new version was released on the Game & Watch. It is kind of similarly styled after the first stage of the arcade game, where it's a jungle type stage. Mm-hmm. The artwork in this one, like, the sprites are really cool looking. You climb vines and dodge weird animals. It's got multiple animals, this one. Like, so the little claptrappy looking dudes that were in the first stage in Donkey Kong Jr., those are there, but the birds are also there from the second stage. So
that's cool.
You're dodging all that stuff. You have to grab a key, bring it up top, and free Donkey Kong. Again, a single screen experience. I'm assuming you haven't played this one?
No.
All right, cool. Then we have Donkey Kong 2. Yes, there was an actual Donkey Kong 2, and it was only released for the Game & Watch. This one was one of the dual screen ones where it folds up like a DS, you know, mm-hmm. back in 1982, because Nintendo's been doing that for long, playing that trick for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's the same concept as the DK Jr. one, but the sprites are way uglier. Like, the art direction isn't as good in this one, but you have to grab four keys and bring them up top. So it kind of combines elements of Donkey Kong Jr. So, like, it's kind of like combining the first and last level of DK Jr., which is it's a pretty neat. It's a fun little game.
All right then.
Moving on. Mario Cement Factory, also for the Game & Watch, this time in 1983. So we're We're on our third year here. Mm-hmm. This is what's on the tin, man. You Mario working in a cement factory, and he's loading trucks with cement.
He's gotten away from monkey torture.
Yes,
and
he's gotten away from monkey torture.
It's a new technique called
monkey torture. Drive them right up to my evil lair. Right up to the edge, and then turn right back around, back to my evil lair.
That wasn't my friend Dave on the phone.
Look up the Barry Lutz Show, kids.
Oh my God, it's so funny.
Barry Lutz Show, starring Barry Lutz. So anyway, Mario Cement Factory. It's a surprisingly fun game. It's just like a giant resource management thing. Like cement's showing up, and you got to go pick them up and put them on these things and load them into trucks. And there's these moving platforms in the middle, and you got to try not to trip and fall and die because that's what it's like working in a cement factory.
Absolutely.
If you're Mario, you're absolutely in a constant state of being ready to die. No, it's a fun little game. It's not amazing, but and it also doesn't need to star Mario, but you know, it's an early Mario adventure. I guess you could call it an adventure. It's really
he's
just
still
a
trying
job
trying
simulator
to figure out what he wanted to do.
Yeah, you know, first off, he's a carpenter and he's on a construction site, and then he's, you know, all of a sudden jailing giant monkeys. Like, I don't know, that was a weird turn, but he took it, and now he's in a cement factory. And then followed up that one also in 1983 was Mario's Bombs Away. It was a panorama screen game and watch, which is the single screen kind of crazy looking ones. It was full color. And in this one, Mario is a Vietnam soldier. Looks like a Vietnam soldier. He's, you know, your traditional soldier looking character. And you're trying to carry bombs past enemy soldiers. And those enemy soldiers are constantly trying to set your bombs on fire. And if they do, they will blow up in your face in a comedic fashion. And you try to get the bombs past them to blow up an enemy base, I think. There's a dude smoking cigarettes, so we'll throw him on gas fires because obviously Mario's partner is an idiot. And this is a weird little game.
It could have been the Cold War.
Could have been the Cold War. I don't know. Either way, it's Mario in a soldier's outfit, so, you know, the green helmet and all that jazz. It's a weird situation. I don't know why this was a Mario game.
Because they didn't want to make a new sprite.
But it is a new sprite. It's they drew. This game looks pretty wild. Like it's very very fully drawn. Like they still doesn't have animation. It's still a Game & Watch thing. But like it's very well drawn. It's very colorful. It's definitely Mario in a soldier's uniform. It's weird.
Well, they were being lazy at that point. They were like, ah, fuck.
Yeah, let's put Mario in everything. So the culmination, the big thing from 1983 was Mario Brothers for the arcade. First appearance of Luigi and my personal favorite arcade game of all time. What is your experience with Mario Brothers?
I did not know how to fucking play this game for the longest time. Like I would pump quarters into it and be like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like I'm jumping on turtles but I'm also punching their underbellies. There's this weird POW block and things happen when I jump on. It's like I played this game when I was like 5. You know what I mean? Like I didn't fucking know what was going on.
I love the sound of this game.
Oh, it sounds great. Like, and as I got older, I started to gain an appreciation for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a very, very fun game.
And it's got that co-op / versus thing going on. Because,
yeah,
you know,
very similar to Joust.
Yeah,
like, I didn't get that game at all. I was just like, oh, this is weird and kind of fun. And then as I got older, I was like, oh, I get what I'm doing here. And instantly it became like, this is super fun.
Agreed. I mean, I fell in love with this one because I had played Super Mario Brothers first, and then I saw Mario Brothers, like, oh my God, Super Mario Brothers is a sequel? That's crazy. And so I'm playing this one in the local rec center in Smithville, and there's something about the sound of this game. The way the arcade machine sounded was just so cool. And the sound of Mario walking and whatnot. I adore it. This was also ported to a great many platforms, including the Atari 2600, which is a weird looking version. And the NES version, which is there's a fun little Easter egg with There's not much in the way of music in this game, but there is there's a specific sound that Mario's feet makes when he walks in Mario Brothers for NES, and I've never heard anyone else talk about this. I'm sure somebody else has noticed it, but I've never heard anyone else point it out, so I'm going to. In Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island for Super Nintendo, when you get on those little four-way platforms, there's like a chain separating these four platforms. They're just floating in the air, and you jump on them, and they move around, and you try to like you push them to rotate them.
Right.
The sound that they make is the exact same sound as Mario's feet in Mario Brothers for NES.
Really? Recycling motherfuckers, I'll tell you.
They did something similar, like a really weird Easter egg similar to that in Mario Odyssey. The sounds that the pause screen makes whenever you make a selection, it makes these little like doo-doo-doo, like these little, they just sound like selection sounds.
Okay.
But if you play them, like if you listen to them in the order as you select them, because it's something different for each screen, It's playing the melody from the observatory in Super Mario Galaxy.
Jesus, that's nerdy.
I don't think I ever would have noticed it if I hadn't seen somebody pointed it out online. I was like, holy crap, I can't believe that. Wow.
Wow.
Pretty awesome. So, Brothers, first appearance of Luigi, super fun game, arcade classic, did very well for itself, obviously spawned many other things, including the next couple of games, which are freaking weird. But and this game's been included in a lot of things, like the Super Mario Advance games. There's like a version of this in there. It's a mini game in Super Mario Brothers 3. You know, it's got those awesome looking crabs and fighter flies and freezies and good stuff. And it's got this great animation for when you knock the turtles over. And that was one of the first things I fell in love with when seeing this game, was when you knock the turtle on his back, he shakes his legs around, and then he gets out, and he's a little turtle in boxer shorts, and he kicks his shell, and he crawls back in. Love it.
Hey, kicks his little feetsies to turn over.
It's awesome.
Pretty adorable.
All right, so then, similar to the other games we have, there was a Mario Brothers released on Game & Watch, although this one, the general concept is very different from the arcade Mario Brothers. It's a multi-screen unit side-by-side instead of vertical like a DS. Luigi's the left screen, Mario's the right screen, and they have to move cakes around to safely get them into a van.
Well, it was a new profession.
So again, we have Carpenter, we have Monkey Jailer, have Cement Factory Employee, War Veteran, and Plumber, and now Baking Delivery Guy.
Yeah, it seems about right.
Yeah. Spot on.
I mean, it was the early 80s. He was an immigrant.
He's going where the work is.
He's going where the work is.
All right, next up we have, for the NEC PC 8801, Mario Brothers Special. And boy, are these games special. So Hudson Soft made these games. I don't know why, and I don't really understand how that relationship worked. Where was Hudson just like, we want to make some crappy weirdo versions of Mario Brothers? And Nintendo was like, sure, live the dream. Put them on your PC 8801. It's similar in concept to the original Mario Brothers, except it does other weird things like jumping on trampolines to turn the turtles over and flicking switches and collecting rings. Not like Sonic rings. I mean, like they look like wedding rings. It's very weird. It's got a rotating set of four stages. They're all laid out differently. So whereas in the original Mario Brothers, it was like the same exact stage layout throughout the entire game. This one is like, this is, think Ms. Pac-Man to Pac-Man, except not a better game. Because it's not. It's limited because of the limitations of the NEC PC 8801. Rolls right off the tongue. This
really does.
Just watch a YouTube video of it. It is very choppy. This was 1984, by the way. We have now graduated to 1984. But as weird as this one is, it was only one of two games that Hudson released that year for the PC 8801, because they also released Punch Ball Mario Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Now this game's weird for a couple of reasons. The obvious one is that this is it's Mario Brothers, except instead of jumping underneath the bad guys to knock them over, there's like a dodgeball that you have to pick up and throw at them, which they call a punch ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why. It doesn't seem to do much for the gameplay. Like, it doesn't make it more fun. In fact, it makes it worse. It runs super choppy. But perhaps the strangest thing is that the title screen plays the Confederate National Anthem.
I'm going to let that go. I've got a lot of material for that, and I'm not going to.
It's yeah. You turn it on, and Dixieland plays. So, yay the South.
I mean, can we make an edit? No, I don't even trust Evan to edit it out. I really don't. I'm not going to.
Yeah, so we're just going to leave that lie.
Yeah, we're just going to let that be there.
Punchball Mario Brothers. It's a weird game. But it's real, and it's official. It exists. So, next up, we have 1984 again. We have the Game & Watch game Donkey Kong Circus, which is probably the most dickish Mario is, because whereas in Donkey Kong Jr., he just has him jailed. This is the game... This is a game where Mario is basically making him perform. He's on the side of the screen, jumping up and down and yelling and chastising him, and you're performing in a circus, I guess. And like, Donkey Kong is like, he's rolling around in a barrel, juggling some stuff. This game is just kind of uncomfortable to watch. Like, it's a juggling game, so it's like, it's essentially like a lot of other Game & Watch games. It's got very colorful graphics. It's a panorama screen game again. But it's like, watching it, I haven't actually played this one. So I was watching a YouTube video, and it's like, man, I feel really bad for Donkey Kong because he looks really worried the whole time. And when he falls down, Mario gets really pissed. I don't know, man.
That's not, weird.
I don't care for this one.
It's weird.
It's very weird. It's very unnerving. I feel really bad for Donkey Kong in this game. Like, it's a borderline some exploitation stuff there. It's sadness.
I just put one of the jokes that I had for.
I saw.
Yeah, that's funny, right?
I didn't actually see the joke. I just saw the notification. Let's do this live on the show. Wait, where is it? Where did it go?
Oh, it's right at the bottom of the chat.
Oh, I just see should have been theme song in Donkey Kong Jr.
Oh, see? You just threw it. Yeah, because we were talking about...
Yeah.
I was going to say, if I go on and explain this one, this really has to be edited out.
That just took me a minute. All right, yeah, wow.
That's funny.
Sadness. Yeah. All right, so...
it's fucking terrible.
Still in 1984, Donkey Kong Hockey for the Game & Watch. This is the first Mario sports game. It's a one-on-one hockey match between Mario and Donkey Kong for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's basically Pong. You know what's interesting about this is that it's
Are there sprites for it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a Game & Watch game, so it's little LCD sprites. It's black and white, not like any of the cool color ones.
Okay.
But this is one of the micro versus system ones, which is
okay,
where they have like the controllers built into the back of it that come off.
Yeah,
it's kind of like a super early prototype for the Switch there. So that's kind of neat.
They really do just recycle ideas, don't they?
They just keep working on them until they get them right. It's pretty fun to look at this kind of evolution stuff. But yeah, if I've played this, it's not super fun. It's not bad. It's just kind of, you know, it's one-on-one hockey.
I mean, Pong is a game.
It is.
It exists.
It sure does. Pong is, I think, more fun than Donkey Kong Hockey because at the end of the day, it is still, single, you know, slides of animation. There's no actual animation. It's just like the dots here, now the dots here, now the dots here. So you just kind of plan its trajectory by filling in the blanks in your brain on where the puck is moving. It's,
right.
I don't know, it's something. So let's see. Next couple of ones are pretty easy to get through. In 1984, we saw Tennis and Versus Tennis. Versus Tennis being the arcade version of the NES game. Mario is in this as the umpire. He's just chilling there, being the umpire for the tennis match. That's all.
I really enjoyed this game.
I
mean, not so much as a Mario game, but at least I think I enjoyed it.
I really liked the Game Boy version of tennis, which we'll get to a little later. The NES version, I think, was still a little too simplistic. I mean, it was all right at the time, but...
I mean, it's not Topspin.
No, God, no. What do you expect? All right, then we have Pinball / Versus Pinball for NES and Arcade. This one was a little bit more different in the Versus version, but what you did with Mario, I think, was the same in both versions, and that was the super cool bonus level. So it's a pinball game. It's cool. It's cute. It's fun. I love the NES version of pinball. I just love the table. It's super fun to play. But there's this little bonus game where Pauline is stuck at the top of the screen and Mario is at the bottom holding this like metal girder over his head, and you got to bounce the pinball off of it, almost like Breakout.
Yeah.
And you make the pinball roll over these numbers, and if you get all the numbers the same color, the one of the platforms that Pauline's walking on will shrink a little bit. And if they shrink enough for her to fall through, you have to catch her and then get her safely to one of the sides, and you score a whole bunch of points that way. Super cool.
It is very cool. And you're right. It is an excellent pinball game.
It is. I feel like it gets a lot of flack for being simplistic, but it's simple and fun. Like it's just a really fun, basic pinball layout for a table. It's good stuff. Then we have Golf / Versus Golf again. NES and Arcade, still in 1984. This is a really boring game.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah, it's really not. And so Mario is the golfer, theoretically. I think at some point Nintendo may have come out and said, no, that's not supposed to be Mario, because his proportions are all, like, realistic. So he looks like a tall, fat dude.
Yeah, it's just generic fat golfer.
Yeah, and, like, it could be Mario, and I think, like, the general consensus was that it was Mario until somebody somewhere said that it wasn't. I didn't really look into it. There's not a lot to say. It's a golf game.
Could be Mario. It could be Lee Trevino.
It could be Dan. I don't know.
I don't know if that's accurate. I don't actually know what Lee Trevino looks like because I don't care.
Ditto.
Because it just doesn't matter to my life. But I think he was active.
Moving on to 1985. Welcome to 1985. We got our first Mario game in the form of Wrecking Crew / Versus Wrecking Crew. I love this game. This is like a sort of a puzzle platformer. You walk around as Mario with a sledgehammer, and you have to break all the walls in a stage. But Mario can't jump. He can only climb. So
Jumpman can't jump.
Jumpman can't jump. And the arcade version versus Wrecking Crew is different from the NES one, like different stages and all that jazz, different sounds, different music. I prefer the NES version. It's great.
I don't know that I've ever played the arcade version.
It's, it's neat. It's kind of more of the same, except there's two-player mode. There's versus Wrecking Crew.
Sure. Get it.
No, I dig Wrecking Crew quite a bit, and I love the original NES version, and it's a really neat puzzly kind of game. Like, it's all about figuring out how to break all the things. Since you can't jump, you have these ladders, and there's enemies that are always walking after you, and you're trying to figure out their patterns of where they're going to go. It's got kind of almost a Burger Time feeling to it. Like, it's a very similar type of skill to Burger Time, the arcade game.
Which is never a bad thing.
Exactly, yeah. Burger Time's awesome. So, also in 1985, there was a little game called Super Mario Brothers. Few people
have
played
it. Nobody ever played it.
Never heard from again.
Never.
This is Super Mario Brothers. It was on the NES and the Famicom. It's the ultimate classic. It is like the basic birth of the modern platformer. It's what all games were measured on since. It's a goddamn masterpiece. I still play it. I can still play this game and have a ton of fun playing it to this day. It controls like a dream. It's got tons of secrets hidden all over the place. It's got amazing music. It's got a very iconic look to it. It's freaking Super Mario Brothers, man.
It is better than ever.
Thank you, Dan. Also, let's see, a year later, we got 1986 versus Super Mario Brothers, which is a very similar game, but with some slightly different level layouts, the ability to collect more coins. It's neat. It's a unique little experience. If you are, like me, have played the original Super Mario Brothers to freaking death, playing versus Super Mario Brothers is just kind of a little screwy because it's like, oh wait, that's not where that's supposed to be. You're a silly game. And playing in the arcade is also neat because it's like a Super Mario Brothers arcade cabinet and you're playing with this weird little joystick with a little black nubby on it. It's a, you know, Super Mario Brothers is a game that was made for a D-pad, and playing it in the arcade with a buttons and an arcade stick is a little weird.
It is weird. It's an interesting, like, you get so you're, because I think we all, like those of us who grew up at that time, are also like it's ingrained in us how that game plays, and then to switch the control scheme
is
just very odd.
Like, you could play it with the NES Advantage if you wanted to, but there's still something about playing Super Mario Brothers on an arcade cabinet and it just being slightly off is really interesting. Now, more than slightly off is a return to the NEC PC-8801 with Super Mario Brothers Special. Again, Hudson Soft. I don't know why this game exists.
This is the one where Mario's a Nazi.
I'll tell you one thing. The whole thing is ugly as hell. This game
I don't think I've ever even seen this.
Oh my god, you gotta see it. It's so hideous. Like, there's no white. It's all yellow. And it's still Super Mario Brothers. It's basically the original Super Mario Brothers with all new levels. Except the screen doesn't scroll. It's single screen. So like you get to the end of the screen and everything goes black and then it loads up into the next screen, which is like the next screen, it's right next to it, but it's this game is exhausting to even look at because it just chugs and is just
game.
It's a I can't believe nobody is I can't believe Nintendo hasn't taken these weirdo Mario Hudson Soft games and like just fixed them up, just cleaned them up, and been like, all right, here's Super Mario Brothers Special. We've had to do basically little to no work on this. Here you go. Enjoy a fancy version of Super Mario Brothers, because they could,
and they would sell.
And they would. I would buy it in a heartbeat.
You have bought it.
I actually haven't. No.
Oh, really?
I don't have a PC-8801, and this was never released on anything else.
Has that stopped you before? Not having the system that a game comes out.
No, it is not.
Well, see, there you go.
I don't even know where I'd find a copy of this. Anyway, watch a video of this. Don't try to play this.
Don't emulate this. Don't play this.
They actually did a graphics filter for Super Mario Crossover, which I didn't include in this because I probably should. I'll add that to my list. Super Mario Crossover. They added a bunch of graphical filters to it, and this is one of them. So you can make the entire game look this ugly. Yay! All right, continuing in 1986, keeping up with the trend, Super Mario Brothers got its own Game & Watch game, which is, again, pretty different from Super Mario Brothers. It's a single-screen thing, and you have these little platforms that kind of shift around all over the place, like reappear and disappear, and you just kind of have to navigate Mario by jumping on him, like, through the stage, and jumping on in the way that you can in an LCD game, where it's like, you know, now he's in the air, now he's on the ground kind of a thing. There's no actual animation. It's pretty fun. It's like a, you know, it's kind of challenging. You just kind of move from point A to point B, rescue the princess.
This one I think I have played at some point.
This is one of the,
just because
I have this
Super
one.
Mario Brothers, yeah, it was like just so ubiquitous, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it
like
was everywhere.
You couldn't avoid it. Somebody you knew had some version of it.
Exactly. And this was pretty cool. I love Game & Watches. If I had infinite money, that's the thing that I would start collecting is Game & Watches, because those things are expensive.
They really are, for no reason.
Yeah. Well, they're relatively rare, they're all unique, and they're Nintendo products. They're collectors' dreams, basically.
Okay, so apparently
three very good reasons. So, also in 1986, we got the official sequel to Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers 2 for the Famicom Disk System.
And they should have stopped.
No. I disagree with you completely. In fact, I'm so glad that there were games after this, because at the end of the day, this game's just not very good.
Oh, you're so wrong. It's so awesome.
Do you know what I'm talking about, Dan?
Yes. I love this game.
What do you love about Super Mario Bros. 2?
Everything. I love how fucking weird it is. I love the four different characters.
Okay, we're not talking about the same game here.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about the Famicom Disk System Super Mario Bros. 2.
Oh, I wasn't looking at the list. I'm sorry. Okay. Terribly hard one?
This is the stupid, mean, hard one.
Okay. All right. Yeah, never mind.
This was eventually released in America as The Lost Levels.
This was eventually released as the stupid, lazy Americans, you're too fucking fat.
They weren't wrong, though, because at the end of the day, like, this game I just don't think is very fun.
It's not.
So it looks almost identical to Super Mario Brothers. There's some, you know, the trees look different, the ground looks different, but the music's the same. You know, there's the skidding sound effect when Mario turns around real fast, but the levels, it's just brutally difficult and, like, mean difficult. Like, you get the evil mushrooms, so, like, if you didn't read the instruction manual, you play the game, you get a mushroom and you die. Like, well, screw you then. The reverse warp zones. Oh, dick
that
move.
Take you back to the beginning.
Yeah, you get to, like, you're in level 5 and you find a warp zone. It says warp to level 1. Also, here's a hole in the ground in case you don't want to do that and you just want to kill yourself. Thanks, never game.
Mind. I take it back. This game is awesome. I forgot how great this game was.
God, this game is brutal and weird. Like, there's castle levels in the sky, and this game just got so strange with the A, B, C, and D worlds at the end. I beat this game when it came out in Super Mario All-Stars. I actually thought I imagined this game for the longest time, because it didn't come out here in America, and there was some sort of friend of our family that we went to a party, and that the kid at the house had a Famicom, and he said, hey, do you want to play Super Mario 2? And I was like, what the hell is this? He's like, oh, this is my Nintendo. And I just thought he had some weird looking Nintendo. It was a Famicom. What did I know? And he puts in Super Mario Bros. 2, the disc system game. And I'm like, what am I looking at? This is so weird. It was blowing my mind. Like, he's putting a computer disc, a yellow computer disc, into this red thing. And now there's a whole new Mario game on the screen. And I was like, this is so weird. But I only got to play it for like 10 minutes.
In Japanese?
Yeah, it was the Japanese thing.
Did that not clue you in?
Well, there's not a lot of Japanese text in the game. It just says Super Mario Bros. 2 on the title screen, and then it's, you know, most of it's in English. So no. I just played the game for a couple of minutes, and that was that. And then Super Mario Bros. 2 came out in America, and I was like, wait, wasn't there another one? Like, I remember these trees looking different, and it wasn't until, like, Super Mario World, the Mario Mania book that they released with that, when I saw them explain this whole Doki Doki Panic Mario 2 thing, I was like, oh my god, I didn't make that up. That was real. Awesome.
I'm not fucking insane.
So Super Mario Bros. 2 wasn't really a great game, and that's why it wasn't localized in the first place. They brought it over, and Howard Phillips was just like, yeah, you shouldn't release this here. This is too hard, and it's not very fun. So
yeah.
And I'm glad
this isn't going to sell, and you're going to kill your franchise over here in this country.
Yeah, like it would have ET'd things. Like, it would have sold like hotcakes because it's Super Mario Bros. 2, right. And then people would be like, this isn't very fun. So
right. And considering what else was coming out at that time, I mean, there's so much other great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, even this early in the NES's life cycle, like, we're still getting some really, really cool things. This is not one of them, though. It's an interesting thing. In 1986, on the Famicom Disk System /PC, only in Japan, I Am a Teacher Super Mario Sweater.
This is actually...
This is the best Mario game ever. So this was made by Royal Industries Company, which is a sewing machine making company. And this is actually kind of a neat thing. It's so weird, but... So it's just like a sweater designing program.
It's a precursor to Animal Crossing.
Kinda. So you just get a big grid, you make a sweater, and then you could send in your designs and they would mail you a sweater.
That's awesome.
It's so fantastic.
Great. I mean, what a fucking ridiculous concept.
It really is amazing. Like, what? Okay.
I wonder how many they sold.
I do too. Like,
how many sweaters got made? Like, how many one-off horrible fucking sweaters did this company make based on the theme?
I would love to see one of the actual sweaters. Like, somebody's got to have one of these things somewhere, and I just want to see it. And
the most expensive piece of video game memorabilia there has ever been. There's a sweater made by fucking
Miyamoto.
No, by Miyamoto. Yeah, sure. Let's shoot for the stars. It's made by Miyamoto.
It's sitting in his closet somewhere. It's one of a kind.
It's probably one of those fucking ugly sweaters he wears.
Probably.
That's probably what it is.
Yeah.
He's got all of them still.
Oh, Jesus. So, yeah, I don't know what else to say about it. It's a sweater-making game. It's got cute music. Moving on. All Night Nippon Super Mario Brothers, also for the Famicom Disk System.
Mm-hmm. All Night Japan.
So this is a prize in a radio contest. It's literally Super Mario Brothers, except, like, instead of Goombas, there's celebrity faces. I don't even know where to begin, so we're just not gonna. That's a thing. It exists. You want to look it up. It's have fun. It's Super Mario Brothers. Then we have Famicom Grand Prix F1 Race, also only for the Famicom Disk System. Didn't come out in America. Welcome to 1987. It's a top-down F1 racing game. There's really nothing very Mario about it, except for Mario is the one driving the F1 car.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Kind of like, Super Off-Road is top-down.
No, it was...
Sort of RC Pro-Am-ish, or...?
Except not isometric. It's more like Spy Hunter or Bump and Jump. Like, it's just literally completely vertical, top-down F1 racing. It's the first Mario racing game. Mm-hmm. And it's relatively unremarkable. It's not bad. It's kind of fun, but you know, it is what it is. Next on the list we have in 1987 for the Commodore 64 Mario Brothers 2, developed by Thundersoft. This game is extremely unofficial. Supposed to be a sequel to the Mario Brothers arcade game, when it is in fact actually just the Game & Watch game in color with new sprites and music.
Sure.
Yeah, this was a way to go, Thundersoft. I don't know. I mean, I guess Nintendo wasn't suing the crap out of people at this point in their careers, because this game should not exist at all.
This is not a thing that would happen today.
Yeah, it's ugly. It's not very fun. And but it's Mario on the Commodore 64. Yay for that. So,
there you go.
And then finally, in 1987, we have Mike Tyson's Punch-Out / eventually Punch-Out for the NES and Famicom. We've talked about Punch-Out. We love Punch-Out. Mario's the referee.
Yay, Punch-Out.
Yeah, Mario. I guess this is technically the first time Mario talked in a game, if, you know, counts as... That counts as talking. Yeah.
We love Punch-Out. Sounds used to haunt my nightmares.
Yeah.
Fuck. Lost the belt.
I got to go back down like 4 ranks. Ugh.
I got to fight Don Flamenco again.
Second Don Flamenco, too. I hate second Don Flamenco. He just takes so damn long. He's not particularly hard.
No.
You just, if you're patient. But at that point, I'm so used to fighting fast fighters, and he's just like, throwing a punch from time to time, and you got to. Ugh, I hate second Don Flamenco. Yeah. Hate him.
Like, second Piston Honda is like a legit harder fight.
Yeah, exactly. Second Don Flamenco obviously is harder than the first one, because the first one is the stupidest easy fight.
Yeah.
Because you just do the left, right thing. But, he takes so long. He's got infinite stamina, and he's ridiculous.
Bitch.
Punch-Out's great. Mario is awesome in it, because he's just a referee in a Mario hat, and
it's pretty great.
It's so weird. It's just so weird. His proportions are completely off. Like,
yeah,
because he looks like Mario. It's like in sort Mario of. Odyssey, where he's running around in New Donk City with all these realistically proportioned people, and nobody bats an eye.
Nope, nobody cares.
So I love it. I love it. All right, so we're gonna take ourselves a quick break, and when we come back, we're gonna do the rest of the Mario games from 1988 to 1989. You're listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. And now here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com. So So, hey, everybody, we don't actually have any commercials this week because I didn't write any. So we're just going to give a general thank you to everybody who tuned in to our 31 Days of Halloween stuff, particularly the Scary Stories read. That was awesome. Did you like reading those, Dan?
I did. I enjoyed
it. I did, too. It was fun. 31 Days of Halloween is always a difficult time for me because, well, I have other things to do. And my workload increases 200%. But you know what? This year was a bit easier on us, and it was a lot of fun. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And now back to
your... New website coming soon.
Yes, new website coming soon. Now back to your regularly scheduled program. And we're back. All right, let's do this thing. Now, in 1988, Super Mario Brothers 2 / Super Mario USA. Dan,
this is my favorite one because it's...
I love this game.
It's so strange.
It's incredibly bizarre. It wasn't originally a Mario game. Everybody knows this story. They didn't used to back when we were kids. But right now it's common knowledge. This was a game called Doki Doki Panic. They reskinned this to be the Super Mario Brothers 2 that America got. And I'm so glad they did, because it's one of my favorite Mario games. I love this game so much.
I do too. It is by far my favorite Mario game. It's not even close.
It's so much fun. It's the throwing vegetables mechanic. I wish Wart would come back, because I love Wart. He's just this so ridiculous cool frog who's allergic to vegetables.
Because why not?
And it takes place in Subcon. It takes place in a damn dream world. It's so ripe for exploration. I'm so really sad that they never went back to this. But they did pull a lot of great characters from this, like Birdo and the Sniffits, the Shy Guys. Like, they really appropriated this this world to a great extent, and I love them for it. I love Super Mario 2.
And Toad is awesome in this game.
Yeah, Toad is great. Toad was always my favorite guy to use.
Mine too.
He was super fast. I didn't care that he couldn't jump that high, because he was the tightest. You know, he stopped on a dime. He dug that sand in the desert super fast. Princess was also really good to use because of that float move. Like, that was also clutch, especially in World 5.
Yeah.
Like, Princess was clutch in World 5.
Saved your ass many, many times.
Many a time.
Fuck, I just can't get through this level. All right, fine, I'll be Peach.
Yep. Or, like, as known at the time, Princess Toadstool.
Yeah, well, yeah.
No, man, this game is great.
Super Mario Brothers 2 is the best.
It is not my favorite, but it is all time. And this was eventually re-released in Japan as Super Mario USA, since they had a Super Mario 2 already. And it's just great.
Also, theoretically, a Doki Doki Panic at that point.
Huh?
Like, did people in Japan, do you think, like, they played this and they were like, this is some bullshit. This is just Doki Doki Panic reskinned.
You know what's possible? Nintendo. I would think that if they had Doki Doki Panic, they would know kind of right off the bat, because the cover's the same. Like, the cover art, they redid that. It's like Mario's in the position of the main character from Doki Doki Panic. Although it is a better game than Doki Doki Panic.
Sure.
One of the things that Panic does... that Mario 2 does way better is that you don't have to play through the game 4 goddamn times.
Right.
In Doki Doki Panic, you actually have to play through every stage of the game with every single character. But it's really neat, because that game is about being sucked into a book in this, like, kind of Arabian Nights setting, which is why the game looks the way that it does. And when you look at the pause screen, where it looks like a stack of paper, or like when they show you the thing, like stage 1-1, that's actually because it's half of a book. So in Doki Doki Panic, that is the right half of a book, and it starts in the left half and it pans over. But in the American version, they basically just cut that in half. So they took off the other half of the book, so it looks like a weird stack of paper, but it's actually supposed to be the second half of a book. It's pretty wild. If you have an opportunity to play the Doki Doki Panic, I definitely recommend it. The music is slightly different. Like, there's less of the music in the game. Like, the main theme, it loops earlier than it does in the American version. But the characters control the same. Most things look the same. The water animates like 4 times as fast, which is really bizarre looking. It's just really neat. This game has such a cool mythology behind it. It's super fun to play, and it's just magnificent. I will say this, I was about to attribute this game to the Mario and Luigi controlling differently, but that actually does go back to Super Mario Bros. 2, the Japan version. You could select Mario or Luigi in that game, and Luigi was more slippery, but he jumped higher and farther. So that was actually where that came from. But this one introduced, you know, the princess is floating, gave you the ability to control the princess instead of, you know, you're not saving the princess, you're saving a land, which is awesome. Because, you know, you don't always need to be saving the princess. I'm fine with that. Super Mario 2 is great. All right, next game, 1988, Famicom Grand Prix 2 3D Hot Rally. This is a sequel to the F1 race game we talked about. It is, again, not particularly Mario, although it does have a bit more of a cartoonish flair to it. It's just that Mario was the one in the cars. It takes a place behind the car view, similar to Rad Racer, and it's a pretty fun little game.
All right. I've never played.
Yeah, it's not super worth tracking down. It's just like, all right, this is a neat NES racing game. I don't know why they didn't release this one in America. It's kind of weird because it's a cool little game, and it's had Mario in it, so why not? But whatever. Yeah. The next Mario game we got was, at the time, it was probably one of the biggest games in the world. It was Super Mario Bros. 3 for the NES and Famicom. Oh boy, Super Mario Bros. 3. I love this game.
It is certainly one of the best looking NES games.
It really is. It looks and sounds completely unique. It's amazing. It's so creative with the Tanuki suit and the flying with the raccoon. Well, it didn't really introduce it, especially if you consider Super Mario Bros. 2 as, like, part of it, because it definitely took some aspects of Mario 2, which introduced verticality to Mario levels. Mm-hmm. And now this was taking that verticality, but adding the more traditional Mario mechanics to it. There's so many secrets. The map screen, the Hammer Brothers, the music, the Bowser fight at the end.
The toad houses,
the white toad houses, the N-marked spade panels, the hammer, the fire brothers, the boomerang brothers. Oh my God, there's so much I love about this game. the friggin' stupid wizard movie. I love watching that movie. And
fantastic.
I will never forget the first time I saw that. Like, when they opened up the screen, I was like, there's a Super Mario Brothers 3? What? Melted my mind. And then, like, not that long after, I went to my cousin Tommy's house, and he freaking had the game in his basement, and I was like, oh my God, I'm playing Super Mario Brothers 3. Oh my God, it's like I'm in the movie. It's so good.
This is all I'm doing from now on. I don't even care about the party. Bring me Cheez-Its.
Jesus, my sister beat this game before I did, and I remember her getting that last castle, and I was just like sitting on the bed rooting her on, like, come on, you can do it, Jess, you can do it. We finally got to Bowser, and I loved that big Bowser fight at the end, because all right, so we got the Koopa kids in this game, right, which I thought were awesome, and they were fun to jump on their heads and get their wands. Like, they weren't complicated battles, but they were like intense because they were short, and you didn't really know what they were going to do. But when you get the Bowser, and it's just like, I can't jump on his head, and he's just like standing there spitting fire at you, and then he jumps up and he slams the ground, and you're just like, shit, what do I do? And I remember her fighting against him, and I was like, Jess, he's breaking the ground. You got to make him fall through the ground. And so she kept trying to dodge him, which she died a couple of times. And when she eventually got him, and he just falls down, and he goes, boom, and that was it. End of the game. I was like, yay! So happy. God, Super Mario Bros. 3, it's a freaking masterpiece of a game. I love this game.
It is a very, very good game. And it was probably like one of the last Mario games that I truly liked.
I'm glad to hear that you liked this game. I didn't know that you had any affinity for any of the Mario games, really.
Really just 2 and 3. Like, sure, everybody, you know, like, it's the game that taught us how to play games, but I was fucking terrible at it. So I just never really loved it. But 2 and 3 I got pretty good at. And after that, I kind of fell away from it, except for the Game Boy game.
Oh, yeah, but true. We will talk about those. So Super Mario Bros. 3, gotta love that. Next on the list, again, a Japan exclusive Famicom disc system, also in 1988, Kaitekita Mario Brothers.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, so this is just arcade Mario Brothers. It's an NES port of the arcade game Mario Brothers, except the sprites look more like the arcade game. So one of the things that was obnoxious about the NES version of Mario Brothers was that, like, I remember, like I said before, I played it at the rec center. I loved the game. And then I said, "Mom, this game exists on NES. We got to get it." So she took me out. We bought it. I took it home. And I was just like, well, I mean, it's good. It plays the same, but it doesn't look the same. It doesn't look right. And I didn't understand why, because it was like there wasn't anything super impressive going on with, like, the turtles falling on their backs and getting out of their shells. Like, I couldn't imagine why the NES game needed to be so dumbed down from on a visual perspective, and apparently it didn't. It just took till freaking 1988 for them to do it.
They just weren't that good at programming for it yet.
I guess. I mean, they made The Legend of Zelda. I don't know why this was so complicated, but whatever. So, yeah, this exists. I didn't even know this was a thing until pretty recently, until like a year or so ago. I didn't even know this existed. But it's out there. Give it a try. It's fun. If you can get your hands on it. It does work on the EverDrive. I'll tell you that for free. Yay, EverDrive. Then we have, also in 1988, the NES got Tetris. Not the Tengen version. This is the Nintendo version of Tetris on the Nintendo Entertainment System. And it's Tetris. And Mario shows up dancing in the kind of like ending sequence. Like, if you get enough lines, there's this crazy, wonderful Nintendo World dancing sequence where Link is playing a cello and Pit is playing the harp and Mario and Luigi are doing a silly dance and Bowser's there and Samus is there and Samus is the one playing the cello, I think. Donkey Kong's playing the drums. Like, it's ridiculous.
Probably playing a pan flute.
Probably. It's just this ridiculous, like, crossover image of, like, NES characters all in one place, and it is wonderful and glorious. And the dance that Mario and Luigi are doing is semi-disturbing. Now we're in 1989, the last year of this episode. So here we go. Let's blow through them. 1989, for the Game Boy, launch title Alleyway, which is basically Breakout or Arkanoid, whatever you want to call it. Nah, it's more Breakout than Arkanoid.
Yeah.
And this is so tangentially a Mario game because it's like he just jumps into the little ship thing in the beginning. So Mario runs out, jumps in, and then, like, there are a couple of stages that are themed after Mario characters with the bricks that you have to break. But Alleyway's
awesome. That's about it.
That's about it. It's tangentially a Mario
very
game.
Good game.
Yeah, it's just a great little Breakout clone. Who doesn't love Breakout? And it was a great game to have on your Game Boy. Everyone had this game.
Right.
Baseball for Game Boy. Mario's on the box. He's the pitcher. I don't know that he's actually in the game, to be honest with you.
He's the pitcher on every team.
He's the pitcher on every team?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I spent very little time with this game.
At least I think that's what it was. I think he's just always the pitcher.
Well, that's kind of cool. Go Mario.
I might be remembering that.
Way to be on every goddamn team.
Yeah. Way to be, Duck.
Then we have the launch title next to Tetris on the Game Boy. Look, Tetris was amazing on Game Boy, and I never want to take anything away from that. That was the thing that sold the Game Boy. But to me, yeah, what sold the Game Boy was Super Mario Land. Freaking love this game.
I do too.
It's weird as heck. Takes place in Sarasa Land, which is all like just giant heads and weird floaty exploding turtle shells, and it doesn't feel like a Mario game. Like, Mario didn't have the right weight to him, or the physics were all wrong, but I excused it because it was freaking Mario on a portable thing that, like, scrolled. It looked like a Mario game. It felt more or less like a Mario game. It was a Mario game on the go.
It certainly sounded like one. It had great music. Oh, my God,
the music. We did a Waveback episode where we're comparing the music of Super Mario Brothers and Super Mario Land, and look, the Super Mario Brothers theme. Super Mario Brothers theme is a freaking work of art. But that was Koji Kondo's. Like, you can't take anything away from that composition. It is an amazing piece of music. But I think Hip Tanaka's Mario Land soundtrack is just better. Because it's more diverse.
I don't think you're wrong. Yeah,
it's an amazing soundtrack. Like, you can disparage any aspect of this game, and I wouldn't specifically argue with you because it's technically inferior in a lot of ways to other games. Sure. But one of the best Game Boy soundtracks. Such amazing music in this game.
Yeah, I really do love this game. It's very weird.
It is very weird. Especially the Chai Kingdom. That's all like, and now you're in China, and there's like weird ghosty dudes jumping at you with ponytails. It's weird.
So strange.
It's so strange.
So strange. But it does, like, even though it does not play like a regular Mario game, it does play very well.
It does play very well. I agree.
They got a good proportion. Like, everything looks good on that size of a screen. You know, like, whereas Metroid 2 ran into that problem of, like, everything was just so big.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, it's zoomed out, but not to the point where it's unplayable. You know, they hit a really nice sweet spot on.
They did. It was very well designed for the system that it was on. This, like you were talking about with Donkey Kong, I would love to have this game remade. I would absolutely love to see that. It's surprising that they haven't.
Like, honestly.
And they so rarely reference this game, too, with the exception of, like, Daisy. This was where Princess Daisy comes from.
Right.
And she's appeared in a bunch of games. But, like, they don't reference, like, the Powerball, the Super Ball power-up. They never reference that again. Tatanga, the main villain of the game, only shows up as a boss in Super Mario Land 2, and then you never hear from him again.
They're saving it. They're waiting.
Friggin' hope so. It'd be awesome.
You're going to get Super Mario Land 3 or 4. Was there a 3?
Technically, there was, Wario Land, Super Mario Land 3.
Yeah. Okay. So Super Mario Land 4 will be like a Switch title in like 2 years.
Ah, that would be great. Like, there's just little Maui heads in Super Mario Odyssey, but they look totally different than the ones in Mario Land. And they're wearing sunglasses, and they're really friggin' weird. I love them, though. All right, moving on. Tennis for Game Boy. This game I love. This is the one that I play a ton of. It's a really fun tennis game. It's relatively basic, but it's got really cute music. And again, Mario's the umpire. He's just there sitting on the sidelines, calling things as he sees them. But it's a super fun tennis game. I can't recommend it enough. Great music. Then we have Tetris for Game Boy. This time Mario's not dancing. He is the... He and Luigi are like the versus icons. Like, you play a versus game with somebody in Game Link and their heads show up in the corners and they do a little something when one of them wins and one of them loses or something like that. They jump up and down. It's very silly. Golf for Game Boy, also in 1989. It still sucks, but it's way better than the NES one. And this time it's unmistakably Mario. He's got, you know, red hat, Mario-ish proportions. You know, that's pretty much that. And then we're going to end off with two very interesting games, and I say that extremely sarcastically, the Nelsonic Game Watch, Super Mario Brothers and Super Mario Brothers 2. Super Mario Brothers is just a ludicrously simple platformer. You get to the top of the screen. I mean, it's a friggin' watch, so how complicated could it be? And I know nothing about the Super Mario Brothers 2 one. I've read that it exists, but I can't find any like images or anything of Super Mario Brothers 2 Game Watch. So if anyone knows anything about it, let us know.
Yeah, you're not missing much, I would imagine.
Yeah, I don't think it's really something that's worth seeking out. Like, I got the Nelsonic Game Watch for Zelda, and that's pretty neat, but I'm not gonna track down the Mario one, so I'm not that crazy.
No. I mean, if somebody wants to give you one,
that would be great. If anyone has them laying around, they just want to mail it to me, yay.
Mail it to me so I can smash it in front of them.
Make me cry. So, of all the games on this list, what is your favorite?
Oh, Super Mario Brothers 2. Super Mario USA, without question.
I think I might agree with you there.
Yeah. That's not even close. I mean, Super Mario Brothers 3 is great.
It is.
It is a better game. Like, I'm not arguing that. But as far as, like, game that I had the most fun with on this list, it is super... Like, I will still play Super Mario Bros. 2.
I think I liked the art direction of Mario 2 better as well. Like, the sprites for Mario and his friends were all they were a bit more cartoony, and like in Super Mario Bros. 3, he doesn't have any whites in his eyes. It just has like dots. And in Super Mario 2, he had whites in his eyes. Like,
well, and they're a little bit more pastel in the colors. That just
And I love that world so much.
I do. I really do too. I like the floating masks and...
Oh, Phantos. Oh my God, Phantos are so cool. I always loved the Pidgeots that were riding the magic carpets that you could take.
Oh, yeah.
That was great.
It's just a really, really great game.
Yeah, and, it's a great platform. I really do hope they go back to that universe
at some point.
I would love to see that happen. I feel like the 2D Mario games are really in need of a revamping after the new Super Mario Brothers kind of ran them into the ground with a very, very safe and sterile art direction.
Yeah.
I don't hate New Super Mario Brothers U, but even going back and playing it now, it's like, yeah, it's pretty good, but it's not great. Like, I'm playing Mario Odyssey, and it just oozes creativity.
Right.
And the Galaxy games were just crazy creative, and the New Super Mario Brothers games are like, yeah, they're new 2D Mario games, but they don't have the same magic that these older ones had. And
yeah,
if there was a recent interview with Miyamoto saying that he's not opposed to different art styles and stuff, man, if we could get a Mario game that like Lizard Cube from the guys that did Wonder Boy, if they could get them to do a Super Mario Brothers 2 style game, like make a Mario game with traditional 2D animation like that looks like that, and you've got yourself a real hit on your hands.
Yeah,
make really, a Mario game that looks as good as Cuphead. I dare you.
Yeah, right. Like, come on, make it happen.
Yeah, seriously, make that happen. All right, so there we go. That's our show. We did it.
And not too long.
Yeah, not too long. Considering we just talked about, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 riveting stuff. 11.
That's why we have an intrepid 13, editor, Evan.
14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. We just talked about 40 games.
Jesus.
We just talked about 40 games for part one of our four-part Mario retrospective.
Yep. Mario's covered 40 games.
So many games. Too many games. Yes, join us next week for part two of our four-part Super Mario retrospective series, where we'll be looking back at the Mario games released between 1990 and 1999. It's going to be a fun one. Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram @Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter @the_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm @GeekadeChris. That's Geekade, K-R-I-S. And Dan is at
Geekade Dan.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out the show notes, which I can promise you right now are not going to be that thorough, because that is time-consuming. And I'm not doing that for 40 different games.
Nope.
While you're at it.
Most of which you don't care about.
Seriously, like just YouTube some of this stuff and call it a day. You can also subscribe to this and any of our other podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making this show listenable for all you folks. And we'd also like to thank our Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme song. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh original content. That is it, everybody. Dan and I are going to bed, like Mario did at the end of Super Mario Brothers 2. Thank you very much for listening. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.